welcome back to a new episode of Overserved. It's been a few weeks, a few busy weeks. The U.S. Open just finished up. It was everything we could have asked for and more. And how do we not start off without talking about Novak Djokovic winning the 24th Grand Slam title here in New York to make his return?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, U.S. Open, record attendance, all the storylines, great matches. But yeah, Novak getting his 24th was pretty much the biggest story of all. You know, it's really a cool thing in history to be able to witness him getting this like monumental win and taking over as the, Grand Slam highest number holder between the three GOATs. And a lot of people I've seen online, I've seen a lot of people say how this kind of like solidifies that he is the GOAT because he has the most amount of slams. I don't know. So hard.
He's been doing it in such dominant fashion. And honestly, I think he was so hyped up. Like, because you have to think at this, when you've been doing it for so long, it's such a high level. You have to find things to motivate you, I almost think. Like, because he's done everything you could do in a sport just about. So I think him coming back to New York, that atmosphere, it being a few years since he's been back here, I think he wanted to prove to everybody, A, he could do it at the highest level and the highest stage in front of a rally environment, you know, in front of when he's playing American fans, which he saw. I think he kind of wanted to prove everybody that he's still that guy and he's here right now. But we talked about it a little bit. The draw wasn't the craziest draw he's ever seen, you know, until the last few matches. He went Fritz, Shelton, and then obviously Medvedev. And it's not that, no discredit to Shelton or Taylor Fritz, but I think honestly, if you're asking anybody, hey, if you're gonna put your money, your hard-earned money right now on the line, and you gotta, you know, bet against Djokovic, and you gotta pick Fritz or Shelton, I don't know if anybody would have done that. You know, I know I could see them making some upsets playing in the United States, but I think everybody expected him to kind of run through those matches.
Totally. And his draw opened up, pretty early on. A couple of the top players he was going to face lost early on. There was a match where he was down to a Serbian 2-0. And I was watching, I was in a meeting, and the guy I was with, I told him, I said, okay, this is crazy. Like, but I literally would bet everything that I own that he's going to win this match. And he's down 0-2. And what other player would you do that for? Seriously, there's no other player. I was thinking about it. It's just Novak. You just know he's going to win because he always finds a way. Sometimes you think he does it on purpose. Like, is he bored out there? Does he just want to like a closer match or something? But he ended up winning that one. And so he just always figures it out.
Yeah, and I think obviously one of the most exciting, I don't even know if you want to call it exciting, it just, there was a lot of media and attention around it. Obviously, the old celebration from Ben Shelton and Novak obviously doing that, beating Ben in three sets, straight sets, and then feeling the need to close out with the cell phone celebration that Shelton did to Tiafoe, whereas he's been doing it the whole tournament, actually. And we talked about this. Me and Rachel were texting that night, and Rachel was furious. She was just, it was just hysterical. She was like, why does he need to do this? And honestly, I was like, I kind of loved it. I loved every second of it because he knows he's that guy. He knows he's that guy. Until somebody makes him stop doing it, he's probably going to keep doing that. And when they asked him why he did it, he even has a sarcastic answer. He was like, oh, it was such an original celebration. I just had to do it too. It's just, I loved every second of it. I need to hear your opinion again.
You know, I was fuming in that moment. Like, fuming. First of all, I just have to say, would Rafa or would Roger have done something like that?
Never.
No, it's somewhat of a class thing here. And for Novak, he's a 36-year-old man. He's got 23 titles at the time. Ben's 20 years old. This is his like US Open like debut. And he made it this far and he's having some fun. He's like honoring his friend who's a track athlete. That was his celebration, his friend's celebration. So he's doing that. And Djokovic just like wins a tough match. And it was tough because I like Ben a lot. I think he's great. He's an American player. It was so unnecessary. It was so just like annoying. And I was so frustrated. I never let any player's actions really like dictate my emotions because, you know, you got to respect everything that they do. And the ways that they celebrate things, but I was so irritated by this. I think Ben handled it really well in his press conference. Really, so the best response he could have given.
You know what Ben was really thinking, and Ben, and you'll see if they ever play again. I think Ben would be highly motivated. I think what Ben wanted to say was, Do you wait till I play him next match? He was obviously never going to say that and answer it the right way that he should have. But my take on it, was it necessary? Absolutely not. Did he have to do that?
No.
Absolutely not. But why do I love it? Is because he put himself, you know, at that level where he could do what he wants and nobody could really say shit about it. Can you imagine if he did that to Ben Shelton and then lost the championship? But it just, almost everybody knew it wasn't going to happen. And it's just like, I think about it, and it's a little bit different in every circumstance, but like when Cam Newton was having his MVP year and every time he did the Superman, when he scored the touchdown, people were furious. And he's like, stop letting me score touchdowns. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like Rodgers, discount double check. And he's, you know, an older player. He doesn't need to be doing that. But I feel like they almost need to find more ways to have fun. Or the same thing with baseball. People are like, hey, when a pitcher throws a home run to somebody and the guy bat flips, And then the pitcher hits him with the pitch, the next pitch, or next at bat. It's just like, instead of hitting them with the pitches, don't let them hit a home run. You know what I mean? I understand why it's not necessary. It is not necessary. I get that. I love it because I don't know. I love tea. Any type of drama or anything, any type of shit stirring. I have a reality TV background. I was in that shit for a reason. I love some drama. I love some tea. So that's for me awesome. I'm gonna have Westhoff put this in the edit so you guys can watch on YouTube. I was texting Rachel a bunch of TikTok edits because people were coming so fast. They were hysterical. They had the funniest like background noises or music where it was like evil music and it would be like Ben picking the phone up and then it would cut to Novak Djokovic slamming the phone down. And Rachel was just getting so mad. And every time I'd find a better edit that somebody would make, it was my favorite part of the night.
I know. Thank you for that. Appreciate
it. I think one thing you did like, though, moving on from the whole Ben Shell in the celebration, was kind of Novak celebrating, you know, or kind of living through Kobe in a way, obviously being his 24th Grand Slam title. I didn't know they had that type of relationship. It makes sense to me now, kind of with both there. I see them as both, you know, superb athletes, superb kind of in the sense killer mentalities that they both have. So it makes sense why they had a friendship and some type of relationship, but I didn't know they were as close as they obviously were.
Yeah, no, it was really cool to see that, like him kind of pay tribute to his friend Kobe. I think that, you know, he spoke about how when he was asked about it, he spoke about how they did speak about what it takes to be great and that mental toughness within both their sports. So they shared that. And it was cool to hear how he was kind of talking about how he thought that even during the match and after just paying tribute to him. It was cool to see that. And kind of like, you know, we always see how these tennis players love, you know, other athletes from other sports. They're friends with other athletes from other sports. We saw the stadium, Ash Stadium, full of athletes watching the tennis players. So it was cool to kind of hear that connection that he had with Kobe.
Definitely. And I think it's cool because you see all the pictures, because everybody in that, you would think in that sense or that lifestyle, being a professional athlete, a high level, they all, I'm sure, at some point cross paths and take pictures. And you sure it does, you know, you don't really know the type of relationship. At least here, it seemed like a deeper one where they had a little bit more of a connection than, hey, you know, crossing paths, taking a picture kind of for the fans and then moving on from it. So it seemed like they had a real genuine connection relationship and this meant a lot to them. So it sounds like Novak's now back on your good side. Is that the case or not yet?
Look, he wasn't, like, it's so hard. Like I was just telling you about this. Like I've worked hand in hand with his uncle Goran at the Sofia Open, worked hand in hand with his brother Georgie at the Belgrade Open. And they're such nice guys. And Novak even has given me great answers in press conferences in the past. So I appreciate that. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I like you. I like your family. But I'm like, oh, why did you have to do that? Like, why do you have to do something? I don't know. Like, I want to just go all in on you and just like really, really like you. But sometimes you just piss me off.
And that's the thing too. Like, I'm like, just obviously a Rafa guy. Nadal's my guy out of the big three. And it's like, I really wish I, you know, didn't like them or have a reason to, but when somebody plays at such a high level and does so much for the game, same thing, like in football, I'm a Giants fan, you know, there's no reason I should like Tom Brady, but when he was doing that for so long and just what the game means to him, it's hard not to like the guys. So that's my stance on it, but hopefully Novak will make it up to you. No more phone call celebrations, or Rachel's coming for you. Or maybe Shelton will get him back. Can you imagine they play at some point and Shelton does? That would be, now that's a TikTok edit I want to see. That would be good.
That would be crazy.
I need to get off TikTok though. I spend way too much time. Moving on. Obviously, after Novak being probably one of the biggest stories, if not the 1A, was obviously Coco Gauff winning her first Grand Slam title. What a better place to do it than in New York. Had to be special for her and kind of all the tennis fans in the United States.
Oh, so amazing. I'm so happy for her. It was so cool to see that. And, you know, we saw that viral video of her as just a little kid. I think she was only 8 years old dancing in the stands in the U.S. Open. And then what is it, 11 years later, she's out on the court and winning the tournament. So that was just a pretty amazing thing to see. She's like, always follow your dreams. But no, it's just, she's so athletic. She's had an insane run, you know, winning D.C., Cincinnati, and then U.S. Open. She's just like on a roll right now and no one can stop her. She's one of the best movers on the court, one of the best defenders. She looks so good out there, and it always blows my mind thinking about how she's only 19.
It's crazy because there's no, it looks like, at least right now, there's not one ball she can't get to in a rally. I mean, it looks like she's dead. Any other player, it looks like a pure winner and she has no shot to get to, and somehow she gets there. It was spectacular. It was like the storybook ending, her going down one set to Sabalenka. And we know Sabalenka is a killer. She does, like, if she sees you and thinks she has you down now, she's going to go for it. And obviously it just didn't happen. And it wasn't Sabalenka's day, and obviously still moved up to number one, but not the way I'm sure she would have wanted to. But like I said, this was definitely the summer of Coco Gauff. I mean, she lost one match since August. We're now in the middle of September, and it was to Pegula, which obviously in three sets, which isn't a bad loss. So she's playing probably the best tennis she's ever played, which says a lot because she's played some great tennis.
Yeah. And lots for Sabalenka to be proud of. Like you said, she got the number one spot. I think that she did kind of, Coco did up her game in those last two sets. I think she did let some of it slip away on her own. But I got to ask you one thing that, I also went viral after the match, was her slamming a racket, in kind of that private room. I thought, I was like, and she got a lot of like negative feedback around it. A lot of people were just kind of, tweeting about how that's wrong. And to me, I'm like, you know what? Good for her. She really does care. This was what she probably thought was going to be private. Probably didn't think it was going to get this many views and blast it all around Twitter. I think that it shows she does have heart, she cares, and I think that the people that are mad has never experienced a really high level pressure, competitive situation before, but it just shows what a fighter she is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I love the stirring, I love the drama, so I would have loved to seen in Arthur Ashe just the crack mid court with so many people around post match. I would love that. But I'm sure
you love the drama. There are kids around. That's a bad example.
Like a party girl. I just love the talking. But yeah, I would have enjoyed it. But what she did, it shows she cares. I think it's hard to say she doesn't, because you see it on the court. She is all in. I told you, she's one of the, like, has to be one of the toughest competitors on the WTA tour. And for her to go back and do that, and that's after like going through the different interviews she had to go to on court, going through the ceremony, and then that's going back, and that's like a few minutes after, and she's still thinking about it, obviously frustrated. I think in a sense, the people that are upset about that video are crazy, because she did it the most professionally, professional way. Right. So,
yeah, agreed.
So the one thing that did come out for Sabalenka, she's a new world, congratulations, and not only that, she has a new big number one fan, and that new fan is Dave Portnoy. And if there's somebody you want on your side just in general, it's probably Portnoy. Dave's had some communication kind of going back and forth, I think through text, I think they got communication that way, and also through social media. But Dave went to his first U.S. Open. Obviously, Dave, for those who don't know, Dave Portnoy owns Barstool, a huge social media presence. I don't know how he made it just now to his first U.S. Open. He's been in New York for 10 years, and being such a big sports guy, I would have been there already. But obviously, he's all over doing a bunch of stuff, so made it to his first one. And he said his first match was seeing Sabalenka. And he was like, I didn't know who this woman was, but she was gigantic. She was grunting and dominating. She was like, he was like, she was killing the opponent. I don't know what match he saw, but it was obviously one she won in straight sets. And he was like, I just became obsessed because she was dominating. She was hitting the ball 1,000 miles per hour. So Dave Portnoy has just been talking about her so much, which I think is hysterical.
I have to say, Dave Portnoy, I'm proud of you. You're getting better with your tennis bets. Last year, I actually messaged him and gave him a hard time. He bet like $30,000 or something crazy on Cameron Norrie to beat Andre Rublev, which I was like, okay, come on. Like, who's giving you the tips here? Like, my boy Andre in the like quarters. I don't know. It actually was around a 16 before that. And so I messaged him. I was like, who, like, that was not a good bet. Like, who are you getting your info from? Like, I could have told you that. And so he made, you know, a bet in this tournament, and I messaged him. I'm like, proud of you. Your betting's getting better. And he sent a bunch of laughing emojis. So yeah, I actually love that he, you know, was giving so much attention to the US Open and Sabalenka. Although one thing I am upset with him about is that 7.7 Honey Deuce review. Come on now, Dave. It's a 10 out of 10. Stop that.
I forgot to see that. He did the like almost the one by review with the Honey Deuce and gave it. I haven't tried it yet. But I would, from your standards, it sounds like a 12 out of 10. So I was a little bit surprised by that. But I do think he's going to become more obsessed, because once you dive into tennis, and especially he's a big gambler. So once you gamble on, you know, it's just another thing once you understand it and know it for him to gamble on. So I think he'll become obsessed. He lives in Miami half the year. So he was like, hey, I definitely want to make it down to Miami. And Sabalenka lives down in South Florida, which I didn't know until now, but I would love to see some type of Portnoy Sabalenka connection, something for social media, them getting together in public, a pizza review or something. I don't know, but I would love seeing them together. But yeah, Dave Portnoy, new, huge, big tennis fan. I think it'll only help the game, bring in more attention.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, if you think about it, like, you know, I think about it all the time. Tennis, there's matches every single day in like different tournaments. There's like two or three tournaments around the world. There's matches every day. You got football, what, like three nights a week, you know, a bunch of games, but it's not something that's consistently every day the entire year. And so that's a lot of matches to bet on it. And so I always thought that too. I'm like, I feel like Dave should have, you know, a Barstool section. Maybe this overserved pod can be a piece of the Barstool someday.
Okay, so I loved it. I love it. Self-promotion. I think I do love Indian Wells, though. I just think he probably doesn't. Like, I think he would go on Indian Wells.
Love Indian Wells.
So it's just, I think once he gets more engaged and signs the Overserved podcast, then he'll obviously start making it out to more and really become a huge tennis fan. But more importantly, past Dave Portnoy, another huge person at the US Open was our co-host Rachel, was there for a ton of days. So I just want to ask about your experience. We talked about it a little bit. So what do you think? The Honey Deuce is still 12 out of 10?
It is so good. That drink is unbelievable. I honestly don't know how many I ended up having. I came home with, like, I think I counted 18 of the, you know, signature glasses. So yeah, the Honey Deuce is up there for me, but I have to talk about the other drink, the Ace Paloma, Dobel, tequila. I mixed in a couple of those instead of mixing in with water. I mixed in a couple Ace Palomas, and those were really, really good as well. That surprised me.
Guys, you heard it here first. Next time you go out, night in the town with your friends, if you're drinking, you know, some vodka, like what's in the Honey Deuce, if you have 3-4 vodkas, usually most people like, hey, mix in the water. Not here in Overserved. When you're trying to tone it back a little bit, you just mix in the tequila or two and kind of move on your night and go back to vodka, another tequila or two when you feel and you need to tone it down a little bit. So take the advice from Rachel. I'm gonna try.
Oh god,
see how it goes.
Bad advice,
but still wish, obviously wasn't able to make it out there, but wishing hopefully next year had a lot going on. College football starting, but I'm glad you had a good time. Now kind of moving on from the US Open, we big news happened today, or dropped today, whatever you want to call it. Simona Halep suspended for 4 years, which is outrageous, or just crazy to hear, because I remember we were talking a few weeks ago on another episode, it sounded like she might be coming back for the US Open. So for it to drop today, for your suspension, she will appeal it, so it'll be interesting to see kind of how it plays out. But I saw Serena throwing a little bit of shade on Twitter,
yeah,
talking about when she lost to Simona in, I think, 2018 Wimbledon. So kind of, I'm sure that's kind of, you know, just a big breaking news after the US Open in the tennis world.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone had the same reaction. It's just shocking. 4 years, like, that's more than any other sport. We all know there's some anti-doping deficiencies in the professional, you know, the sport of professional tennis. But this is just really, really shocking and outrageous. I've been very, very hesitant. You know, a lot of people have tweeted me asking me my opinion. It's such a delicate subject. And I don't know all the facts. I really don't. And I know that there's a lot that has gone into it. Yeah, I'd like to really hope and believe that Simona, like, you know, really is, you know, a clean player, and that she just, you know, it just was an unfortunate accident. But, you know, seeing the shade from Serena and reading from a couple players, some of their subliminal comments, it just makes you think a little bit. And I still have yet to kind of really form an opinion on this subject, but it's just unfortunate overall. I loved her. I think she was so great for the sport. I think that if it is 4 years, we're not going to see her again. She's 31. So it's just a really, really tough situation overall.
Yeah, this reminds me of guys, and if this is the actual case and it comes out, it reminds me of baseball guys like Alex Rodriguez, who were so talented, and there was no reason they needed to do it. One of, you know, my favorite players and probably one of the best athletes coming into baseball, one of the best shortstops. And for whatever reason, if whoever gets in that ear that tells them they need it, it'll take them to the next, you know, upper echelon, whatever you want to call it. Sometimes they feel a need to do it, or whether it's get back from injury, or whether it's take that game to the next level, whatever it may be, kind of reminds me of that, where if it does happen, and almost even if it does or not, once you're accused of it, even if it was for a short period of time, it stains your reputation kind of forever, you know? So even if you were a great player, great athlete, did it for a few months, get caught up, get tested for a season or two, whatever you want to say. And then it comes back to you. Now, there's people who can't get in the Hall of Fame for baseball. There's people now in tennis whose reputations are kind of falling, cracking down for people who had a great career. So a lot going on. I'm sure over the next few weeks, months, we'll hear more about it. But there's been a lot of doping cases going on in tennis. Extremely interesting kind of why it's all happening now, at least especially in the last few months. So we'll kind of see how everything plays out.
Yeah. And I think if there's anything that comes out of this, I really just want more structure around the whole, you know, anti-doping, you know, stuff in tennis. That's what I just hope that they can do, and have it more reasonable. 4 years, 18 months, like, it's just too much. Like, take a look at the other sports. I think golf is like the next most severe, and it's nowhere near tennis. I think it just, there a lot of improvements need to be made. I know the PTPA, who I've worked with a little bit, they're really pushing to make these changes, which I think are entirely necessary. So it'll be just really interesting to see, you know, how this case plays out in the future for anti-doping in tennis.
Yeah, I think they need to just take your advice and kind of just stick to honey deuces and no medical drugs that could possibly get them tested for anti-doping or doping. If they just stick to the honey deuce and tequila like you do, they'll be fine. They won't get tested for anything. So that's kind of the people in the tennis world. But I think that's it for this episode. A lot to talk about. Huge couple weeks for tennis. A real exciting couple weeks for tennis. But looking forward to see where the next couple weeks go. And we will be back on track and back next week with a new episode of Overserved. And looking forward to it.
Thanks for watching, guys.
See you guys next week.